He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good morning to our listeners to this week's show of Car Keys with Jada Markin, Mike Flint, and Robin Leach. A lot has gone on since our last show. We are in the month of, almost in the month of July as we do this show. And Jay can start off by giving us a rundown of the excitement that occurred in our listening area over a last weekend's event at Lime Rock Racetrack.
Lime Rock Park. This was the Luna 150 truck, NASCAR truck race. Much anticipated, with people in our area wondering if this was going to disrupt the whole everybody's lives over the weekend, and it did not. I don't think so anyway, even though I was there. There was a huge crowd. The event was extremely well run. For those of you who watched it on TV, it was extremely good TV coverage. But being there is always the best experience. The weather was great. It was actually kind of hot on Saturday. The racing was incredibly good. So a great event, very well organized. And I think we'll see NASCAR back in our neck of the woods in the future.
It started with a rather large parade of giant tractor trailers, correct? Car carriers? Truck carriers,
yep.
I should say, in this event.
Yep. They went through town, I believe, on
Friday,
Thursday evening.
Thursday evening.
You know, unfortunately, there was pouring rain at the very time they were going through town, but it didn't stop people from watching and some people were waiting almost an hour before the trucks were scheduled to go through. So it was a pretty impressive parade. And we can call it that. These car haulers are pretty incredible pieces of equipment, always very well maintained, shiny, and honking their horns. Great event, great racing. I was there. We were there as vendors the entire weekend. Weekend in Lime Rock talk is Friday, Saturday. We all know there's no racing on Sundays, so. The campsites were all sold out. I heard the number 500 campers. I'm not sure if that's a number of people. I think it's maybe a number of campsites, which is more than I thought Lime Rock had. But it was packed, and the event was really, really well organized. And I know that local businesses benefited to some extent. We're relatively busy. So I think all around a great event.
There were road closures around our area. Jay, do you know anything about them? Because I didn't happen to have to travel any road areas where there were supposedly one-way traffic during certain hours of certain days.
I think it all went very well. There were a massive number of state troopers around. I think traffic was well organized. I think it was all a non-issue. I don't know. I did not experience any of those traffic patterns because I was at the track early and left late. So I was before and after any crowds coming in or out. I don't have any.
Well, I think I agree with you, Jay. I think I did not attend any of the events, but I certainly saw the truck carriers coming and leaving. In and around and outside of our listing area over the weekend. And those trucks seem to be a lot larger than what I consider to be the normal stop and shop size trucks. They seem taller and they look bigger. And as you said, they glistened with shining tabs pulling them and lots of notations on the side of the trailers.
So were you on the roads at all this weekend if you were not at the track?
I was on the road, yes. I was on the road between here and south part of Connecticut. That's where I saw the tractors. I was on 684 as they were all leaving Lime Rock. I was around here during the beginning of it. But let's move on. Jay, you had a list of things to talk about. You can continue.
Well, how is the industry going? I mean, I look at car sales.
Let's talk about a little bit about the industry. On the news this morning, of this morning's show, there was a news blip about a big problem happening in China with the electric car industry situation. The electric car sales in China apparently have been going downward, and I don't know whether it's going to spread to Europe and therefore it's going to spread to us, but a price war is going on. Price war in the car industry is not a very happy thing at any level for anybody, I would say. But the news was that there was one company, BYD, Jay, you've mentioned that company as being one of the bigger Chinese car producers, has put a 30% discount on their electric vehicles in China. And what I heard was, apparently that brings one of the electric vehicles, and these are much less expensive electric vehicles than we can get anywhere near in our country, in the U.S., and I would suspect Europe as well. There was apparently a model of BYD is now at $8,000 or less available. And this is going on because there are too many manufacturers, allegedly, in China. And they're all competing for the same buyer market. And people are just not spending money. Now, if that price war were to hit Europe and instituted by the Chinese car industry, what do you think could possibly happen?
I think the Chinese car industry is around us to stay. It's not here, really. I haven't seen the blip on BYD. I do know they have, you know, close to 20% of the worldwide EV market. I think it's 18% last year. There is a slowdown in car sales, maybe in China. I mean, I have not read up on that. But I know that car sales are slowing down here too, or we're not. Is it a tariff thing? There seems to be a consensus that tariffs are slowly and finally affecting car sales here.
What I'm reading about China though right now is that their sales of electric cars were up 35% year over year for 2025. And that they're around, their projection to reach 60% of total car sales in China is looking good. And that's totally contrary to what you were talking.
Cars are $8,000 to $15,000 per car in China, which is really extraordinarily cheap. They might achieve that, but I think that's what's driving some of this discounting that's suddenly appearing. And this was a June broadcast. So this may be significantly later and maybe more current than the press releases that you might have at your fingertips, Mike. And even Automotive News has said that they sort of agree with you on the Chinese market.
Well, yeah, I'm just looking at the
market is increasing.
At the releases and seeing that, you know, they have electric sedans starting at 14,007 in China.
And so, now maybe as low as 8.
I'm not finding that anywhere right now.
No, haven't because you didn't hear what I heard.
So we know the price of the cars in China has always been, you know, is
right. We're never going to see those in the U.S. That pricing, okay, or Europe, I would guess.
You want an inexpensive electric car in the U.S. You go and on CarGurus
golf cart.
And you find a 2-year-old Chevy Bolt for $15,000. That is a great price.
I don't even think they're available at that. But that would be a good buy for anybody in the U.S.
There are a bunch of them. I just looked a half an hour ago. I'm sure there's
$15,000. How about
under $15,000
also?
20,000, 25,000 miles, 2023s.
Okay.
So the problem we have is that. Or any new industry, coming out with new product, you start with high end product, and then you go down in prices. I think the Chinese car market is so ahead of us in as far as EVs goes that they've reached levels of production where the cost of producing cars has really gone down.
Right.
So yeah, they have much cheaper cars. The problem is going to be when they start exporting, and they have those $15,000 cars. They're going to be extremely competitive, and the markets, and like Europe, they have made inroads in the last year. So I think the auto industry on the global level is about to be really, it has been, but it's going to keep being shaken up completely.
I agree with you. Let's go to newer vehicles, the newest vehicles that keep coming on the market. Every year there's an evolutionary or change in some aspects of automobile production. And the example I want to give for this week's show is I happen to be driving a dealer-provided Audi 2025 Audi Q5.
What's wrong with your Audi now?
But that's not relevant to the show.
And
I am distressed by what they consider to be improvements in dash design, control design, ideas, which to me are significantly less interesting or easily manipulated than the older designs that, Jade, you and I are used to. And it can start with something as simple as the gear shift selector. It has disappeared on many cars, as you know, and replaced by dials in some cases, push buttons in other cases. And the nice, handy, dirty gear shift selector that I have on many of my vehicles, Jade, I think you do also, has gone. And I want to say that I know that if you go buy one of these newest cars, you have to learn the car in a whole new way because there are no longer sort of physical controls for dials on radios, dials for the heat and air conditioning controls, along with maybe push buttons. They are now all on a screen, and the screens are very distracting because you have to find them before you can manipulate them. And I think this is a step ahead. I think this is a step back. And I'm sorry the tech designers and designers of dashboards with these now long screens going from the driver's side midway into the passenger side with all this data and computer programming for everything.
All right, Robin, let me barge in on this one.
Okay.
A couple of things. I think you're showing signs of
no.
Age.
Don't bring it up.
And the gear. So a couple things. The gear lever. I think let's keep in mind that people don't even know what gears are anymore. There are no manual transmissions anymore. I mean, talking about younger generations, and gearboxes are something that have, you know, with 8, 9, 10 speed automatic transmissions. The transmissions are made to function so that seamlessly. So you have no idea what gear you're in. So if you fast forward from there, you know the whole idea of having a gear lever is kind of antiquated. So I think we have to get used to that little flip the button or a switch, you know, or a toggle like Mercedes has or had a few years ago. I can live with that. Where I do totally agree with you is that screen controls for everything from radio, car settings, climate control are just very, very hard to use and take a lot of time to once you know how they function, that's fine. But if you're driving on a bumpy road, if you have nothing to place your hand on, the second you hit the screen, your fingers going, you know, not where you needed to put it to activate whatever command you're
absolutely correct. Trying to hit the right place on the screen.
So the next evolution, really, what makes the most sense is voice command, right? And some cars are doing that already. And if they can,
Yes. Well, I don't have a brand new car to study and say that all the voice commands that I would like to think that you're talking about are ready to go. I do not know whether, for example, voice commands tell you can say set temperature at 75. They probably do, Jay.
probably do. I mean, I don't have any of those cars either.
I haven't tried that on this Q5. What I can do, I can change the radio stations if I know the call letters or the numbers. The old dial that you could just turn and go up and scroll up and down an AM, FM band or a satellite radio band is much preferred by this person on car keys to trying to have them, the stations that are in the area that the radio is getting on a screen. And as you said, you try to dial it with your finger and the screen goes up and down. And sometimes it goes up and down faster than you want it to, and you can't stop on the station you see if it is available where you are driving at the moment. And
that's why I'm a big fan of Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. And it's a shame that some manufacturers are making those systems, are dropping the compatibility of those systems with their own. Why reinvent the wheel? Apple and
right.
And,
if it ain't broke, why try to fix it, make it better? Because it's my opinion that they're not making it better.
Android Auto, those are systems that we use on our phones every day. They're the same for everybody, and that's the key in having systems that work. Is that you have muscle memory and you know how to use the systems. And I know I drive a lot of different cars, and now that cars are more modern cars, most of them have Apple CarPlay. I get in the car, I can use the phone, I can do text messaging by voice, and I don't, and I don't have to get distracted and use the phone, and I use Google Maps or Waze to get around, and so it becomes a lot easier to, to jump from one car to the other. And there are aftermarket, display units for older cars. And I keep saying I'm going to get one, and I plead guilty that I have not, but I will get one for at least one of my cars. So safety. Last night I was coming back with my trailer from the track, and it's a pretty long trailer. And to make it into the driveway off of Main Street in Lakeville, I have to go all the way to the left and basically stop oncoming traffic and then turn into the driveway to the right. And when I do that, I come to, I come to a stop, I put my signal to the right, and I go way to the left of the road. It's pretty obvious if you're following me that I'm going to do a maneuver that's not quite, quote-unquote, legal, but it's out of the ordinary, and you would pay attention to what I'm trying to do. And what does the person right in back of me do as I start swinging to the right? They go right by me. And yes, legally they were in the right, but it's just like, okay, people, just can you not keep an eye on what people are doing around you and kind of adapt your driving behavior to what's going on around you, even if you are adapting to a situation that's not quite normal? People are just totally oblivious. Anyway, that was my little rant, but to the point that, keep your eyes peeled. This is summer. This is summer driving. There are a lot of kids out on the streets. There are a lot of pedestrians. And there are a lot of people who are going to do things that they probably shouldn't be doing. And you just have to be able to, adapt and avoid, getting into trouble in those situations. Any of this makes sense?
It makes a lot of sense, but it's just the whole problem of people who are trying to go faster to get by slower traffic, and they don't pay much attention to what the people in front, why they are doing what they're doing, as you noted, trying to get into a driveway with a long trailer. You're like the tractor trailer drivers, right, that have to make a wide turn at an intersection to make sure that the rear wheels don't cut the curb and or run into a something that might be in the way because you cut the turn too short.
Exactly.
But to that point, the safety situation of driving in the towns has gotten pretty crucially difficult in some ways. And we discussed on a recent show about the electric bikes that are sometimes on the sidewalks versus the roads, and some of these some of these riders are trying to be acrobats on the on their bikes, and you know, you're driving through a village in a car, and you don't see these bicyclists sometimes because they're much smaller than vehicles, and if the, the weather's not perfect or the lighting's not perfect, these kids don't have a clue what's going on as they're riding their bikes down a sidewalk or on the road as they take their hands off the, you know, the handles and you know, do
so
whatever else. They're
here's like. Let's not blame the kids. It's our responsibility as adults, parents, educators, to actually teach them how to ride safely. And kids are also
the adults don't even know how to ride these some of these things.
No, you don't know how to ride a bike. So anyway, I want to get back to pedestrians for a second. I was reading an article where pedestrian fatalities in crashes last year went up in Connecticut. Pedestrian fatalities account for about 22% of the total number of fatalities on the roads in Connecticut. Or I think that's, and that's probably a nationwide number. And mostly these crashes with pedestrians happen, they're more likely to happen at night when there's poor visibility. They're more likely to happen, they're more likely to be fatal when car is going over 40, 45 miles an hour. That is the threshold where you have a pretty good chance of not making it if you get hit by a car, which is why when we're going through towns, we really should bring the speeds, our speeds down to 20, 25 miles an hour.
Well, is it all in towns that this is happening? I mean,
all in towns.
I've seen people walking at night that actually I haven't seen until I was almost on top of them because they're riding or walking around at night in black clothing.
Yes,
that's ridiculous.
And a lot of people. Here's the thing: if you're a pedestrian and have if you're and kids are pedestrians who have never driven cars, right? Just because they're under the age of driving, until you start driving a car. You don't realize how much as a pedestrian you're putting yourself at risk in low visibility situations or, you know, around a curve or just walking on the road with traffic in your back. I mean, how many times do we see people, younger people, just walking on the right side of the road with traffic going right by them?
One of the problems you'll see in a lot of these is that they've got earbuds and stuff in, you know. Again, you're not paying attention to your environment at all.
So I'm getting to my point where, you know, I was reading this again this morning, and we're saying, okay, we have to do more, and it's distracted driving, and we have to, you know, improve, and all these rules to protect pedestrians. But the number one thing we need to do is educate pedestrians. And pedestrians need to do their part not to get mowed over. And I'll say it again and again and again. I will, knock on wood, probably never get run over by a car because I'm so paranoid when I'm walking along the streets or crossing a street that you're just not going to hit me. And, of course, hopefully nobody proves me wrong. But so it is your responsibility as a pedestrian to keep your eyes peeled. It is the law in Connecticut that you have to put your hand up or make eye contact with a driver when you're going when you're crossing a crosswalk. So
where are they learning that?
You don't have
where are they learning that?
Well,
you say there's a law. The same problem goes for walking facing traffic. Isn't that a law? And they walk
I don't think
traffic.
That is a law, but whether it's a law or not, it's common sense.
Well, yeah, that's common sense was just what I was going to say. Common
okay.
sense is not here anymore. It's gone. It's
that
been replaced
correct.
By laws.
I agree with you, Mike. And you know, we've got these
we
crosswalks with these
problem.
Lights.
Well, you know,
we've got these crosswalks with these lights in town up at Hotchkiss School, and I watch people run across Hotchkiss School the other day as I was approaching them. They did not push the light. And they expect me to see them jumping out of a shadow under a tree as I'm approaching those lights at 30 miles an hour, which if it's dark, you cannot see them until they're in the walkway. They don't turn the lights on.
That's probably one of the biggest problems I've heard from everybody, is we put in all these silly-looking crosswalks with lights and bells and whistles, but the pedestrians just simply walk out without pushing the button.
That's correct.
And that doesn't help matters. Then I have people, too. I'm going to throw in my oars on complaining. I have people that I've gotten behind that they stop at every crosswalk for no reason.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it becomes a real confusing point because, you know, that they're supposed to use the button to turn on the lights and everything, and nothing says that you have to stop at every crosswalk. And it confuses people
flashing,
and it messes up traffic.
If you
see that, or you see a pedestrian in the road, but how many times I've been behind a person, there's nobody in sight, and they just stop at the crosswalk. Looking for somebody to come along, I guess.
Okay, that's your rant. Robin, what's your beef this week on the roads?
There's nothing new. We have gone over and over our beef. The non-signaling and changing lanes. The erratic driver of the slalom.
So here's a question for you. If you're driving on Route 22, for both of you, and the speed limit is 55, and you decide that 38 or 42 miles an hour is a perfectly adequate speed for you.
Yep.
Would it not be considered at some point when there are 12 cars behind you to move over and let them pass?
There you go.
There you go.
That's it. If you're going way below
this. This is a good rant for all of us to take up because I was on 22 and they were going 45 and I was about seventh in a line of cars that was following, and I could, on a curve, I could see the car that was going 45 and double line, double painted line, and even on a straightaway, the double painted line stayed double quite a long time before there's a passing zone because of sight line restrictions and that kind of thing. And these cars just rumble along at the aforementioned slower than posted speed sign as if, the world behind them can wait.
Here's another question for you, and it relates to my beefs on the road. If you're going to make a left-hand turn and put your signal on Main Street, do you get close to the center line to let people go around you, or do you block the whole line of traffic behind you by staying in the middle or on the right side to go?
Because that happens all the way. You know, I pull over if I know there's a passing room between my right side, which is if I'm going left, and the curb, I try to make sure that I leave enough room for the cars behind me to go around. But not a lot of people do that. And it is very annoying when somebody is going down the middle lane and they stop in the middle of the lane. And very often there is insufficient width on the passable side of the vehicle making a turn to the left, let's say, for those cars, especially if they're trucks, to get around without hitting the curb. So they all have to stop.
All right. Well, it's insufficient time now, so drive us on out of here, Robin.
More rants
next
week.
Okay. I guess we have finished another program of Car Keys with Mike, Jay, and Robin. Until next week, we are Car Keys with Robin Hood Radio.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.